Hey everybody, before I get into today's episode, let me tell you about a great new game that I found. It's called Politics and War. Politics and War is a massive multiplayer online game that puts you in charge of your very own country. You literally start out by founding your very own nation and you control every aspect of it from there. Want to go to war? Good luck. Want to work cooperatively with other countries for mutual benefit? Sure! Politics and War is the best nation sim out there. If you've ever looked at a country and thought, man, I could do way better than those guys, then go to politicsandwar.com or download the app on the Google Play or Apple App Store today and see if you've got what it takes. We have sadly reached the end of spooky season. It will live in my heart all the year round, but starting next week I'll go back to regular episodes until Christmas time. So that said, how about we go out with a bang? Be warned, this episode might be more violent than most, so if you're sensitive to violence, then make sure you've got your finger hovering over the skip button. My name is Josh, and this is Obscure History. It was a pleasant summer day in Fountain, Michigan. A gentle summer breeze pushed cool, humid air from Lake Michigan inland. On most days, Fountain was barely a village. It was sparsely populated, isolated from major metropolitan areas, and utterly rural. However, on this particular day, there was a din of celebration. Though the United States as a whole was enjoying a post-war economic boom, and prestigious Atlantic families were amassing wealth to rival gods, this was a meager celebration. The people at this gathering were not moguls, nor were they movers, nor were they shakers. They were hard-working farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. World War I had ended a decade previous, and World War II was still a decade away. Those gathered at this family reunion were honoring the living, mourning the lost, and rejoicing the fact that they were able to gather at all. This was the family reunion of the Galembo family, and it was the largest on record in Fountain, Michigan at the time. They spread a massive summer feast on checkered picnic blankets and let the warm breeze brush across their smiling faces. The children laughed and played. The adults reminisced about times gone by and speculated about times to come. And the elders looked at their tiny empire with satisfaction, feeling blessed and thankful. As the festivities came to a close, the massive family crowded under a blue Michigan sky to take a photo. They put on their best smiles and looked at the camera through squinting eyes. The photographer snapped the shot and the families parted ways. I'm sure that that day was enjoyed by all who attended, but little did they know. Somewhere among that crowd of faces in that photo was a cold-blooded killer. Have you ever considered how many people you're near in a day? The number fluctuates wildly depending on your situation. If you're delivering sandwiches in the heart of Boston for a living, then you probably pass thousands upon thousands of people in a day. An unknowable amount, likely. If you're a rancher in Logan, Utah, then you might only spend time with your family and your livestock. There are too many variables to actually make a reasonable guess at this, but that doesn't stop people from trying. We are pretty good at throwing out generalized statistics without offering any research to back it up. Like, have you ever heard the average person will swallow 8 spiders in their sleep during their lifetime? It's completely false. Oh, but haven't you heard that we only use 10% of our brain? Also, pure rubbish. Yeah, but everybody knows that men think about sex every 5 seconds. It's common knowledge. Actually, it's not. Experts have fully debunked that statistic as well. Statistics are uniquely powerful because we see numbers as concrete entities. Somebody might throw out a random fact like, did you know that dogs don't actually sweat? They get it all out in their drool. And it's easy to be like, no, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But if somebody said, did you know that 25% of dog breeds don't sweat and instead get rid of excess body heat by drooling? It's a little bit harder to completely dismiss. That's why there are a seemingly unlimited number of viral Facebook posts that go something like this. Did you know that you will walk past at least 36 murderers during your lifetime? Or some variation of those words and numbers. We want to believe it because it's got specific numbers, and also because we're all intrigued by crime, whether we admit it or not. It's a statement that is just ripe to embed itself in our simple brains. It also preys on our anxieties. We are all probably nervous about being near a criminal, at least somewhere deep down inside. That said, I'm sure that you want an actual answer, and, well, it's seriously not very simple. Because I am not a mathematician, nor am I a statistician, we need to enlist the help of one. So I found a wonderful blog by a data scientist manager named Leo Chin. His blog is very funny and educational, but he actually sought to answer the question, how many murderers will you walk past in a lifetime? He says, first, let's unpack that question. The scope of the question is murderers. Let's assume unique murderers. So if one of your coworkers were a murderer, you would only count them once, no matter how many times you interacted. The scale of the question is average people, which means that we can use an aggregated data and only have to worry about the population described in aggregate. Walk past implies a very low level of interaction, but is inclusive of higher levels. That lady at the grocery store with whom you were competing for the last jar of your favorite peanut butter counts, but so does your mom. In their life indicates that the question is not iterative. It is limited only to the time frame in which the observer is alive. Great. Now let's set some assumptions and examine if they are reasonable. You live in the United States. Our crime rate is rather high, which may be a function of reporting, but the rate of murders is actually below average for the world, but still higher than Europe, Asia, and Oceania. North and South America actually have the highest intentional homicide rate in the world. Let's keep it simple. You can only walk past a murderer on the street if they got away with murder. Popular TV shows say that once 2 days has elapsed since the murder, it is unlikely to be solved. In reality, the truth is unlikely to be that easy, but there's also very little data on the topic otherwise. We may have to give this one a pass. Mike Amott at Radford University has compiled a data set on the basic statistics of serial killers. It contains data on 3,873 serial killers and 11,187 victims, or approximately 2.89 victims per serial killer. Such a low number brings into question the definition of serial killer, but it also tells us that this is a safe assumption. The average person walks past some number of people every day. This number is vague and contentious, so we'll deal with it later. And finally, let's get to our basic facts. The average lifespan in the U.S. is 78.74 years. The rate of murders in the U.S. in 2013 was 4.5 murders per 100,000 people, or 14,196 estimated in total. The population of the U.S. in 2014 was estimated at 322,583,006 people. One-third of murders go unsolved. He continues to say, first, let's try out a logarithmic scale distribution. Just from the previous example, it's clear to me that some people have a lot more interactions than others. Let's test the resultant range when we test a range that varies in a logarithmic fashion. If you meet one new person a day, you meet 27,375 new people throughout your entire life, of which 0.41 of them are likely to be unapprehended murderers. Of course, this means that if you meet 10 new people a day, then you've met 4.1 murderers throughout your life. And if you meet 100 new people per day, then you've met 41 murderers throughout your life. This is a very intriguing result because it is actually quite close to what the picture told us. If you live in or around a city and walk somewhat frequently, it's very conceivable that you could meet 100 new people per day. Of course, if you live in a small town or in a city but you do not walk around a lot, 100 is less likely to be achievable. The power of the logarithmic scale is that you get a wide and diverse range without a lot of work. Mr. Chin goes on to try another way of finding this average, and ironically, he comes to a fairly similar number. At 26.2 new people per day, the average American meets 717,225 people throughout their lives, of which 10.76 are likely to be unapprehended murderers. So hopefully that alleviates some of your anxieties, or perhaps it made them worse. If that's true, then I'm sorry, but the fact remains we will undoubtedly walk past at least one murderer in our life. And maybe if you're as unlucky as the Galembo family, they might just be your nephew, or your brother, or your grandson. Herbert Galembo was a nice boy, at least from the sparse records that have been left behind to tell his story. He grew up in Ludington, Michigan, right on the Lake Michigan coast. He was likely impoverished, but that didn't stop him from being an outstanding student. He was involved in school plays and was commended in the local paper numerous times for having over 98% attendance for the school year. He was, by all accounts, nice. Despite being a good student, it seemed as if Herbert struggled to find direction in his teenage years. He joined a civilian conservation corps, which was a work relief program that gave millions of young men employment and environmental projects during the Great Depression. The CCC planted more than 3 billion trees and constructed trails and shelters in more than 800 parks nationwide during its 9 years of existence. This highly successful program was one of the most popular aspects of FDR's New Deal. Once the CCC gig dried up, Galembo enlisted in the Army. He was shipped off to Fort Dix in New Jersey. He married a woman named Joanna Pippet. And he, just like so many other young men, was sent off to war. His duties are unclear, but we know that he went, and that when he came back he carried with him the demons of warfare, while his loved ones praised his valor. It's the great dichotomy our veterans face. We praise and glorify what is often their darkest and most harrowing hours. Regardless, he and Joanna had a couple of kids, and things seemed like they were going great. At least, for a time. But this was not to last. But before we get into the disturbing crimes of this all-American boy, we need to stop and hear from some sponsors, so hang tight for about 90 seconds, and we'll be right back. If you're listening to this, then you're probably a big nerd. And that's fine, this is a judgment-free zone. I'm a big nerd too. And you know what big nerds like? Learning. And if you're a nerd that likes learning, then I've got a great opportunity for you. One Day University is your go-to spot. Every college has that one professor whose class was so popular that students just lined up to get a spot in their class before they graduated. One Day University brings over 200 of these top-rated professors together online to present incredible live-stream talks based on their most popular courses. Professors are selected from some of the best schools across the country, and every weekday, One Day University offers a new, one-hour live-streamed talk followed by a live Q&A with that professor. Members also get access to a library with over 500 past recorded talks available on demand. You can learn something new every day about history, politics, art, science, music, psychology, and so much more. There's no homework or tests, just the joy of learning new things from incredible professors. Memberships are just $8.95 a month or $89 a year, but you can try 2 weeks for free. Plus, if you use code OBSCUREHISTORY and sign up for an annual plan, you'll get your first year half price. Join today to hear amazing lectures like Unexplained History, What Historians Don't Understand by Carolyn Winterer of Stanford University, or maybe The 5 Most Powerful People in the World by William Burke White of the University of Pennsylvania. Again, that's onedayu.com/obscurehistory for a 2-week free trial. And if you like it, use promo code OBSCUREHISTORY for half off an annual plan. June 8, 1948. The brutally battered, semi-nude body of a 43-year-old woman artist and mystery story writer was found last night in the bedroom of her North Philadelphia apartment. The victim, Mrs. Catherine Meller, mother of an 18-year-old son now in the Navy, apparently had been beaten to death. Her body was found sprawled across a blood-spattered bed by her husband on his return from work. Police said that she wore only a pair of silk stockings rolled down nearly to her ankles. A gold chain and locket circled her neck. Both eyes were blackened and severe bruises covered her body, at least some of which were inflicted by fists, according to detectives. Her husband, Charles, 47, a former newspaperman, told police that he had brought her a pint of ice cream from the dairy plant where he was employed. On entering the fourth-floor apartment, he said he called to his wife but received no answer. He looked into the bedroom and discovered her body. Her head rested on the blood-soaked pillow and both legs dangled over the side of the bed, feet barely touching the floor, police said. Part of her blood-covered underclothing was found under the pillow while her other clothes were scattered about the room. Meller told detectives at a police station that his wife had telephoned him about noon that she mentioned nothing unusual. He could give no motive for the slaying. Meller was held for further questioning. Other residents of the building told police that they had not heard any sounds of a struggle or argument in the Meller apartment during the day or evening. Detectives said that there was no indication that the apartment had been forcibly entered, but added that it was easily accessible from the street through the open first-floor window. The body was sent to the morgue where an autopsy was performed to determine the exact cause of death. The police leapt into action. They began canvassing the neighborhood, interrogating anybody with a criminal record, questioning anybody whose job required them to travel door to door, and within a week, they had a suspect. June 13, 1948. An 18-year-old African-American Iceman confessed today that he killed Catherine Meller, mystery story writer, when she resisted his advances. The youth, Bayard J. Jenkins, had gone to the woman's fourth-floor apartment last Monday by mistake to deliver ice. Mrs. Meller, 43, clad in a play suit, said that she had a refrigerator and did not need ice. But Jenkins said, in his confession, "She looked good to me, and he could not dismiss her from his mind." After completing his route, he said he returned to Mrs. Meller's apartment. When the writer resisted his advances, Gorman quoted Jenkins, "He knocked her down with his fists. She got up." Jenkins said that he picked up an 18mm war souvenir shell nearby and struck her on the head. And for a while, the public was satisfied. That is, until a Philadelphia gravedigger turned the case upside down. December 9, 1948, Saginaw, Michigan. A former gravedigger surrendered Wednesday and told police he beat to death a Philadelphia woman when she spurned his advances. He fled, according to written statement, because he learned his job required him to dig a grave for his victim. Police Lieutenant Joseph Buginski identified the man as Herbert L. Galembo, 24, a red-haired foundry worker who recently lost his job here. Buginski said Galembo told him he surrendered because he learned that a Philadelphia Iceman was accused of the slaying. Galembo, in his statement, identified his victim as Mrs. Catherine Meller and said, to the best of his memory, she was killed last April. Records in Philadelphia show that Bayard J. Jenkins, 19, an African-American Iceman, was convicted November 23rd on a charge of murdering Mrs. Catherine Meller, 43, a writer and artist, June 7th. Jenkins, facing a possible death sentence, has appealed for a new trial. Galembo was quoted as saying he beat his victim to death with a war souvenir shell in her apartment. A similar death weapon was described at Jenkins' trial. Married and the father of three children, Galembo said he was separated from his wife. The police lieutenant said Galembo told of drinking and brooding over the woman's death after he read in Philadelphia papers that the Iceman had been convicted of the slaying. "I was afraid I was going to go haywire," Galembo was quoted. "I can't seem to help the things I do. I think something cracked overseas." He told officers he served 5 years in the army, part of the time in Italy. Though he confessed, Galembo recanted his statements soon after, and unfortunately this case hit a dead end of sorts. With the help of the Philadelphia NAACP, Mr. Bayard Jenkins was able to challenge his death sentence on the grounds of inappropriate policing, and though he didn't get off the hook completely, he was able to reduce the sentence from death to life imprisonment. From the sparse documents I've been able to find, the case against Jenkins was flimsy at best. The police grabbed him off the street and interrogated him without just cause. They searched his house and found a blood-stained uniform. Jenkins said that the blood was his, the police said that it was Miss Catherine Mellor's, and eventually the police pulled a confession out of the young man, who was barely a legal adult. Both confessions were completely circumstantial, but what happened afterwards makes me believe that Galembo's confession was more than just a drunken tale. After the confession, Herbert Galembo stayed quiet for a while. He was separated from his wife and children for reasons unknown, and since he wasn't really tied down to anything, it seems as if he moved around a little bit, maybe doing odd jobs here and there. But we see that he was sent to trial in 1951 for nearly beating a woman to death with a screwdriver. May 16, 1951. Herbert L. Galembo, 26-year-old prison parolee, Tuesday waived examination on an armed robbery charge in the slugging of Mrs. Lester Glenn, wife of a Wisconsin industrialist and daughter of a Madison banker. Municipal Judge Peter R. Von Sprecken bound Galembo over circuit court trial and set bond at $10,000. It was not furnished and Galembo was remanded in jail. No trial date was set. Sheriff Edward Anderson said Galembo admitted that he might have hit Mrs. Glenn with a screwdriver, but claimed she fell out of the car early last Sunday as they struggled for her purse and the $60 it contained. Mrs. Glenn, 33, remained in critical condition Tuesday night in a hospital. Her husband heads the Glenn Sportswear Company of Manistee. He was found guilty for these crimes and was sentenced to 20 to 30 years, and was sent to Southern Michigan Prison. But while he was there, he would not repent, nor would he be reformed. After only 2 years of time served, Herbert made a break for it. December 21st, 1953. Detroit. Police guarded five families today from one of the five still-free convicts in Jackson Prison's mass break as Michigan mobilized one of its biggest manhunts. The five fugitives were believed holed up somewhere in Motor City. One of them, Roman Usiandek, 37, a psychopathic murderer, swore vengeance against witnesses at his trial. Every available patrolman and detective pressed a relentless search for the escapees. Rooming houses and hotels were canvassed. Relatives of the men and their known friends were being watched by more than 400 officers. 13 prisoners broke out of the world's largest walled prison Saturday night, cutting their way free with a blowtorch. 8 were recaptured. Police said there was a possibility the five still free had invaded private homes and threatened residents with their lives unless they provided concealment during the intensive manhunt. Usiandek swore to get those who put him behind bars in 1942. When sentenced to life, he told then Assistant Prosecutor Tom Pashinsky, "They won't be able to hold me. I'll be back, and when I do, you'll be number one on my list." Pashinsky, now a circuit court commissioner, was removed from the city by police. Another being guarded was Mrs. Sophie Kubert, who identified Usiandek as the man who killed her husband, Peter, during a holdup at their bar. Warden William Bannon of Jackson Prison described Usiandek as a psychopath. Detroit and suburban Hamtramck police know him as a cold-blooded killer. The leader of the mass break, the largest in the history of the prison, said the escape had been planned since Labor Day. One of the first recaptured, Herbert Galimbo, said an acetylene cutting torch was assembled piece by piece from parts stolen from a construction company removing an old water tower within the walls. "It started out with just two or three of the boys," he said. "I was really surprised when I got outside and counted 12 others. It looked like most of the yard come with me." They crawled through a sewer tunnel using the torch to cut through the iron grating covering the entrance outside the prison walls. They risked death by scalding steam, which is pumped at certain intervals to flush the sewage. At least three investigations were planned or are underway by state authorities in an effort to pin responsibility for the break. It has carried out a bloody riot in April 1952. "You can't blame it all on a shortage of manpower. There has been neglect someplace," Warden Bannon declared. Herbert Galimbo started his life as the picture of the American dream. A nice kid that always made good grades, had perfect attendance, worked hard to provide for himself and his family, and fought for the nation in World War II. But somewhere along the way, some wires got twisted. Maybe it was just like he said. Maybe something cracked in his mind when he was fighting in Italy. Or maybe it was deep down inside of him all along and he finally lost control of those violent urges. We'll never know for sure. Herbert Galimbo died at the age of 51, likely while still serving his prison sentence. Anonymously, without pomp or circumstance, without even an obituary. Thank you, everybody. I seriously appreciate everybody who listens to this show, and honestly, I can't believe how many people actually do. If you listen to the very, very end to find the indie music features and etc., then you get two thank yous because you double rule. As always, if you need help finding your new second favorite podcast, hop on over to earbudpodcastcollective.org or Indie Drop-In Network, and Ariel and Greg can help you find that. They are two amazing services that are trying to fix the podcast discovery problem. And if you're not in the industry, there's super definitely a problem. If you Google podcasts or if you look at the new and noteworthy, you'll see that basically everything that gets recommended comes from the same sort of like four or five sources. And that's a problem because there are thousands of very, very good podcasts out there that are hosted by people just like me that could really benefit from having some more listeners. So Ariel and Greg, respectively, of Earbuds Podcast Collective and Indie Drop-In are being proactive and trying to solve that podcast discovery problem for everybody. And I appreciate them. They're two of the best people in the industry, and I could not recommend you to their services enough. Okay, so I'm skipping past any personal announcements because, frankly, I don't really have any this week. Please send in questions for Thursday footnotes. They can be about anything. I am always taking questions for that. Hit me up on the social medias or obscurehistorypod@gmail.com. You can always send questions to those places, and I will always look at them and respond, maybe, on the Thursday footnotes. Anyways, I'm jumping to the end because I'm super excited. This outro beat is going to be the beat that I use for Thursday footnotes now. I could not be more impressed with it. I actually had it custom done by Our Goddess. They stream on Twitch basically every day. Sometimes it's beat making, sometimes it's Pokemon, but it's always a good time. If you're into live stream content at all, definitely hop on over to Twitch and search Our Goddess. That is just the letter R and then the word goddess, no spaces or anything like that. I'm over there occasionally and it is a blast. So anyways, I hope you enjoy this beat. I was so blown away by it. I honestly couldn't even believe my ears when I heard it. So I hope you guys have an awesome day. It's super late. I gotta go to work tomorrow and, it's gonna be an adventure. You guys have a good week. Thank you.
peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the sources, scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
Thank you.